Hello and welcome to the Innovation Agency podcast with me, Caroline Kenyon.
Well, today I'm in Lancashire and South Cumbria with three of the leaders of the integrated care system. I'm with Dr. Amanda Doyle, OBE, who is also Chief Clinical Officer at Blackpool CCG, Faldon Wyre CCG and West Lanx CCG, and she is a GP. Talib Yassin, also OBE, we're an esteemed company, who is Executive Director of Transformation for Lancashire and South Cumbria ICS. And also Dr. Andy Curran, who is Medical Director for the ICS and an A&E consultant at Lancashire Teaching Hospital. So first of all, we want to know a little bit about you. So Amanda, as well as having these four jobs, do you have time for anything else?
Not a lot. I've got four children as well, although they're all pretty grown up now. So my family and my work keep me very busy.
Okay, that's fair enough. And Talib, I'm quite intrigued. I'd like to know a little bit about your background, but on Twitter, your handle is Tamed Prince, so that says something. I'd like to know what that says.
Well, that's going to be part of the international mystery, I think, and I'll explain that maybe in a separate dedicated podcast because it is quite complicated. So I've got four children, two of them who were younger, and my background's in nursing. And I came to Lancs in South Cumbria about 18 months ago because I saw this as a great opportunity to do something really quite different and help reshape our services. And I spent 7 years working internationally before that, which I find really useful in terms of thinking about how we can do things differently, got a chance to see different systems and different things. And I try to do as much out of work as I can with two youngish girls. That's not always that much. But running and cycling and outdoor things are my sort of passion out of work.
Okay, thank you. And I did see a photo tweeted of a snowy Lakeland fell at the weekend. So, yep, I can see you're an outdoors type. And Dr. Andy Curran, you're from Edinburgh, as we'll learn from your accent in a minute. When you're not an A&E consultant or medical director, what is it that keeps you going?
I feel like I'm the odd one out because not only do I not have a recognition from the Queen, I only have one child as opposed to four children. But that one child keeps me busy, and I have to admit, it's socialising. It sounds corny, but there's something really good about chatting to friends, spending time with them and getting out. Non-medics, because sometimes you end up in a world where you're only speaking to people who do the same job as you can become very insular. So there's something I find really refreshing about spending time with people with nothing at all to do with medicine.
Amanda, you've got a big challenge here in Lancashire, South Cumbria, as we have around the country with our integrating care and health. One of those is the deficit. How are you going to address that?
Well, if you've got 3 days, we could go into all the detail of how we're going to address it, but we do need to recognise that at the moment we spend more than our fair share of NHS resources here in Lancashire and South Cumbria, and we need to do something that means we live within our means. So the plans we've got for the next 5 years, one of the things we are trying to do is to be more efficient, to get more for the resource we've got. That means we are going to have to look at different ways of working in collaboration across organisations, different ways of delivering services, streamlining things in such a way as we get the clinical outcomes we need, but for less cost. And so that will mean reducing duplication. It will mean being more efficient with the resource we've got. It will mean doing less of the things which don't have a proven evidence base. So there are lots of interventions we carry out that there's no evidence they benefit patients. There's lots of medications that we prescribe that there's no evidence that there is clinical benefit from those, and we will be asking people to work with us to look at how we can make best use of the money we've got coming into the system.
So collaboration is obviously very important. How do you get everybody on board when obviously agendas are going to have to change and people are going to have to sign up to things which are going to change the way they do things in their own organisations? How do you do that?
There's always something that makes us feel uneasy about change. Some people like change, some people find that change can be unsettling. If we don't change and evolve, then we'll end up being stagnant. And as Amanda was saying there, we don't live in a rich man's world. We have to make some efficiency savings. And whilst we're lucky to work in the NHS and have the NHS providing our care, we could always do something a bit better. So to change, we improve. we don't always have to, sometimes we think of change as being a bad thing, but actually that's how we make new advances. We bring in new technologies, we bring in new treatment methods that are there by changing as well. We've got to also think about the people who benefit from that change. As members of staff within the NHS, if we only think about ourselves and I might have to work somewhere different or do something differently, the people who we're serving, our patients and population, they might not get that benefit because we're stuck in our own ways and don't look out and see how it could be done differently. So there's something about having a shared vision. It can sound a bit corny when you have that shared vision, but if it comes down to, is this the treatment I'd want for my family? Is it as good as I'm able to deliver? Why don't we have that as that shared sort of vision where we can really make sure that we're doing the best for everyone?
On your website, you describe an ambitious vision to empower and support local communities. How do you achieve that resilience among individuals and in communities?
I think that's through a range of ways. One of the, I think the building blocks of that is having strong neighbourhoods and primary care networks. And we already do a lot of work with the voluntary community faith sector right across Lancashire and South Cumbria. And the more opportunity I've had to go and meet those organisations, some of which can be 3 people, some can be 100, it's amazing what they're doing. And I think health and care needs to connect with them better. But it's also about getting a sense of how we use the skills that we have working in partnership differently. So most of the, a lot of the stuff I go and see and talk about, I say, do you think we could do better with what we've already got? And I haven't gone to a single meeting yet where people have said, no, I think we're doing everything we can. So they recognise some of those frailties in there, but I think that's one of the mechanisms, and that's very much at a local level. I think there's working better together in places like, say, in Preston or in Pennine Lancs or the Bay. And then there's working across the whole system together. And I think there's different things we need to do at different levels. So we don't need the frontline staff nurse to necessarily be involved in the system change, but we need activity in all of those areas if we're going to make a difference and have resilient communities.
So one of the things we've talked about is how difficult it is to manage within the resources we've got. Actually, what we really need to do if we're going to do that is to make our community healthier. We will never, ever manage to our budget if we try to let our capacity grow to meet the demand that's coming on us. So demand is rising inexorably. Population are getting older. The number of over 85s has tripled in 40 years, due to go up about another 15% in the next 5 years. And all of those over 85s are living with one or more long-term condition. And managing those conditions is much more important than treating them and curing them and sending them on their way, which is what we've traditionally done. So we cannot possibly grow our capacity to meet that rising demand unless we do something about the nature of that demand. And we know that about 45% of our disease burden is preventable or modifiable, so we've got to tackle that. We've got to work with our communities to enable them to manage their own health and to prevent ill health or exacerbations of existing conditions in our community. And to do that, we need to change our focus. So we need to work with people to get them to not only learn and understand how to manage and improve their health, but to take responsibility for improving their health. There's a tiny proportion of health, life expectancy and well-being that is related to what the NHS does, and we can't treat our way out of this problem. We cannot prescribe for a healthier community. It's about lifestyle, it's about smoking, it's about alcohol, it's about weight management, it's about physical activity, it's about living in a community that's economically viable, where you have access to outdoor space, to decent food. It's about education, it's about transport links, it's about infrastructure, and we can't do all of that on our own. We've got to do that with our community and with our partners, with local authorities and other organisations. And the NHS is the biggest employer in many of our communities, and it's really important that we take that responsibility as a key institution, an anchor institution, and as a key employer in the community, as well as taking seriously our responsibility for treating sick people.
So I can hear that some of those are the responsibility of the public sector, but a lot of those comes down to the individual. How do you make change in individuals? How do you actually make that happen?
Well, I think you have to support them differently and provide them with a range of options. And I think a great example recently in our EPIC event was Coastal Housing from Blackpool did a presentation on what they do. Now, to somebody like me who's never really had anything to do with housing associations, I just thought, oh, well, it's a transaction. It's about giving someone somewhere to live. But they had transformed the life of this young man and his mother, who was living in isolation, only went out at night to avoid seeing other people, to the point where he was standing in front of an audience of 300 people and comfortable to be asked questions about his journey and what had happened. And that's what we need to connect if we're going to do exactly what Amanda said and do things differently in the future, where people become more reliant, can access resources. But it's not just about, I think, the NHS, our partners in local government, and those other organisations are doing just as valuable work as I think the NHS is doing, but it isn't just about what we do. And that's a great example where I think the housing association's taking a public health approach to supporting people. It's not just put somebody in a room and that's the transaction. They're really doing something different. And we have a lot, I think, in the NHS we can learn from those organisations to transform what we're doing.
And again, it's not just about physical health, it's about mental health as well. So there's something about enabling people to live the life that they would want to lead, whereas you can end up being in a cul-de-sac where you can't see a way out of it. And so why would you think about your physical health when you have too many pressures who are coming in from all the different social aspects nowadays? So there's something about not preaching to people, but enabling people to get out of where they don't want to be.
And see, let people see that they can have hope. If your life feels hopeless, why would you want it to be longer? And why would you put effort in? Because it is, you do need to put effort in to make yourself healthier. And so it's much wider than just the NHS. And that's why our primary care networks, our GP practices, our community services are increasingly working in neighbourhoods with the voluntary sector and the faith sector, but also with the community themselves, about giving them the tools that they need to become healthy and to stay healthy and to look after themselves and each other when they do have long-term conditions.
And as you said, workforce, obviously the NHS is a big employer, so they're part of the population, but there's, as there is nationally, a workforce shortage. And at the same time, you want it to be a great place to work, you want to look after your staff's own well-being. How do you do that? How do you align that problem of the workforce shortage with wanting to do the best by your staff?
One of our key aims is to make sure that our health and social care system works not only for the people using it, but also for the staff as well. There's that recognition that you speak about where you work, you encourage colleagues to come and work with you if you feel proud of it. And so it's enabling people to actually have some input to the health system that they work in, change it for the better, and then they can speak more positively about it. There's always times in people's work where they just feel a bit flat, where they feel like they're not doing the best that they can. And so it's helping people change the service for the better so that they feel more positive about it.
So involvement becomes a positive action which makes them feel better?
It can do. It comes with a responsibility as well. It's dead easy to sit back and criticise and say, well, I don't like this and I don't like that. So there's got to be some element of responsibility. If it's not working, how do you think it could work better? And not with this blank canvas. It's not a big wish list for people. It's recognising that if we develop and spend money on one service, we might have to stop another service. So if what I'm doing is what I've always done, but hand on heart, don't think it's evidence-based or bringing benefit to my patients or population, I should be stopping doing it to enable me to do something else. We've got to be mature about it and grown up.
But the workforce is a massive challenge for us. So, you know, the money is a challenge, but the workforce is arguably a much bigger challenge. We are struggling to get people to want to come from other parts of the country to work in Lancashire and South Cumbria. That's not us, that's a problem common to all coastal and rural areas. People want to be in big cities, particularly young people. And so we have to do something to not only attract people to come to work here, but to give opportunities to the young people who are born and bred here to develop skills and access the training that they need or get the university places they need to enter the healthcare professions. And so we've got... we're attempting to do what we call grow our own, looking at better use of apprenticeships, working with our universities and our colleges around enabling local training not only for doctors and nurses, but for a range of professionals, so that if people who are from Lancashire and South Cumbria train here, they are more likely to stay and want to work here. And so we don't want to be constantly reliant in trying to attract people from other areas. But a big issue for us is not just attracting new people, but getting the staff we've got in the NHS to want to stay. So we have huge numbers of vacancies for nurses, for doctors, for other clinical professionals. Lot of people retiring early, a lot of people working part-time, and that's compounding our problem. So if we can take action which will make the job feel doable, make the workload feel not overwhelming, give people the incentives they need, whether that's flexible working or opportunities around portfolio careers, and really enable them to want to stay and work in our system. That's really, really important to us.
I think the other issue is we've got all the experience you could get in a major city in Lancashire and South Cumbria, but it's just distributed differently. So we've also got to find ways to allow those staff who want that range of experience to ideally do that in Lancashire and South Cumbria, not just think, well, I've got to go to another big city, you know, 100 miles down the road. That doesn't help us. And most of our organisations are doing a lot of work about how they empower staff, make it a good place to come to work in, as good an environment as possible, you know, flexible rostering. A lot of that work is going on. But I think one of our greatest opportunities, like Amanda says, is to give people the opportunity right at the, if you like, the building blocks of the service, where they can come in and see a whole career path. And, you know, you're talking to two doctors and a nurse, but actually, the NHS is an ecosystem. You can come in and have a career in IT. You could be a gardener, you could be an engineer, you can be a planner. There's a whole range of jobs there. And I think sometimes we don't get that message across to people when they're thinking about a career in IT. So apprenticeships are being offered not just in clinical roles now, but much more broadly than that, so that we can get hold of people and hold them. So we could have somebody, say, who's working as a support worker now in a care or residential home. Nothing stops them being a chief executive in the NHS in the future. And there's plenty of examples of that. But we've got to connect that better together as a system, I think, so it doesn't feel so fragmented.
And actually, one of the issues we've got in Lancashire and South Cumbria is we've got areas of economic deprivation, and areas of economic deprivation have poor health. You know, poverty breeds poor health, and poor health breeds poverty, and it's a vicious circle. And yet the NHS is not a low-wage employer. The NHS has well-paid jobs that give real career progression opportunities. We need to encourage people to think about the NHS and to think about Lancashire and South Cumbria. It's a great place to live. Much more, you know, housing is cheaper and better than in lots of the big cities. It's a beautiful place, and we have loads and loads of jobs and opportunities for people, but people need to think about it, as Talib says.
And Talib, you mentioned EPIC before, which is something, it's a flagship programme you've developed here in Lancashire and South Cumbria. And EPIC stands for, remind me?
It stands for Engage, Integrate, Promote and Collaborate. And it's something that...
Not in that order, though, does it?
No, not in that order, but just mere detail. The part of the plan behind that was, how do we get to share the great work that people are doing? Because every time we go out and talk to people, we're tripping across great work. Or something like, I gave an example with housing associations. I didn't really understand housing associations until I heard a few of their presentations, and I thought, wow, there's something completely different. So we've been able to bring, you know, 300 people on two occasions right across our system, health, local government, voluntary community, faith sector, to share what they're doing and make connections. So I can personally say, in one of those events I was in, people were actually saying, oh, I need to talk to you. They just finished presenting. They were making those sorts of connections, recovery college, housing associations, other work that they're doing around mental health and frailty. And that's what I think we've got to do to also, I think, help people realise you're not on your own. The thing you might be struggling with in the Bay or on the Fylde Coast, probably somebody else struggled with it a year ago, and what could you learn from them? We're not suggesting you just take what they've done. But building those connections, I think, supports that resilience in communities, and it supports certainly resilience in staff to think, I can learn from someone else. Not easy to do. It's only we run these in a day, but the amount of benefit that we get from bringing people together is immense.
Now, if we can talk about innovations, because the Innovation Agency, of course, is involved in the ICS and very supportive in terms of improvement work and in introducing you to innovations that we curate. What's your own opinion on the innovations that you think are going to make a real difference? Say, if we look forward to 5 or even 10 years, what are the things which are going to change as a result of innovation?
I think the big things that will make the difference are actually tiny little things. So there's not this one big thing that's suddenly going to come in and completely revolutionise it. The innovations will be the things that are in people's houses, where they're using it almost without realising that it's improving their health or their well-being. So we heard a lot of stuff about, I think it was a home assistant like Alexa, but instead of a GP, I think we forget the benefit that having contact with people can have. So there's something about increasing communication with other people that will improve how our aspect is, our well-being. It will get us being more physical, so that it won't be something I think that we necessarily use within the NHS. I think the big innovations will be used at scale across our whole population, and hopefully we don't see it as being this innovation. It's something that we all want to have because we can feel that benefit coming through.
For me, I think it will be, there's the whole thing around personalised medicine. I think that will change how we do things. But I think I agree with Andy. I think some of the other things will be, how do we access the NHS as users? So, you know, I'm wearing a watch that takes my heart rate. Will I be able to connect that to my GP record? If they see something unusual, would they be able to give me a call and say, we'd like you to pop in, we think your blood pressure's high or your heart rate's unusual? And I think that sort of positive surveillance for some patients could make the difference between coming into hospital, staying at home and being well. And we've still got quite a lot of Victorian practices in the NHS. We still rely on paper a lot. If you think about just something simple like taking your car in for a service now, you don't get a logbook anymore. It's all computerised. They know roughly when you're due for a service or an MOT. We need to move into that way of thinking that I think will release our staff capacity to allow them to work with patients who need that input, but also support people to be well at home, but use the service in a different way. And we've got great examples with digital innovation across Lancashire and South Cumbria where that's already happening. GPs with advice and guidance, able to drop a note to a hospital consultant, might save a patient journey, give advice to the clinician about, no, this seems the right course of treatment that you're proposing. And again, if you put yourself in the patient's shoes, that might mean you avoid going to a hospital site, parking, spending half a day, etc., etc. All of those things, I think, will make a big difference. And a lot of those tools really support the staff to do things differently, because everything's at your fingertips, as opposed to it's in a paper record and it's in someone's desk. That's not where we need to be. We've also learned, you know, with the Innovation Agency, coming to a lot of their hackathons, events where you can put in front of clinicians new stuff. You know, you don't know you can do new stuff until somebody says, oh, this is actually there now. You think, oh, that I didn't know that. So I think a lot of those events really help us. And I think we were in an event last week with the Innovation Agency where we were learning about how a different system had approached innovation and working together. So it isn't just always about patient service. Sometimes it's about how you work together can also change the way you use resources and utilise staff. So I think they're a critical friend to us and really help underpin what we do in partnership working, because you're working across the whole of the Northwest region as well as nationally. So we get to learn from the Innovation Agency what's working well.
Thank you. Amanda, what about you? What do you think of those innovations you'll notice?
There are some big technological innovations that I think we will notice. I think if we start to use technology in the NHS in the same way that we do in every other aspect of our lives, I think we would see big differences. That needs big infrastructure support to do that. But we've seen recently, for example, the recent trial looking at chest X-ray reading via AI. I mean, that is hundreds of thousands of hours of work by experienced clinicians that can be done just as well by computers. If we can just take out the stuff that can be done just as well that's routine and allow our clinicians to focus on the stuff only a person can do, the more complex stuff, the stuff that needs face-to-face communication, then actually we're making a better use of the workforce that we've already said is really, really limited. But the biggest thing I think that we need to see is the kit bit and the innovations and the bits of technology is in many ways the easy bit. You've got really clever people and really clever stuff. But the real trick is getting people to work differently in order to maximise the benefits of those things, and we're not really very good at that. So we need the ability to respond to what's available to us and get all of our staff changing and working differently so that we get the benefit from some of those innovations, and we're a way off that at the moment. Mm. And part of that is people are just so busy. So they're so busy, they haven't got chance to raise the head and take the opportunity to put changes in place to the way they work. Yeah. So they just keep going with the nose to the grindstone. And I think there is an opportunity there for us if we can break that cycle.
Mm. Can I ask what motivates you personally to take on this challenge?
I don't know, really. I love it. I think we need to make a difference. So all my clinical practice for the last 20 plus years has been in the most deprived ward in Blackpool, which is the most deprived town in the country. So the health challenges and the health inequalities I see there are just enormous. And actually, you know, in this day and age, we should be able to deliver improvements to people's health and ways of living and well-being far faster and in a more effective way than we do now. And I think that's the challenge, really.
Well, let's be optimistic. It's been fantastic listening to you all. So thank you so much, Andy Curran, Talib Yassine and Amanda Doyle.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And you can find out more about the work of the Lancashire and South Cumbria ICS at healthierlsc.co.uk. Thank you for listening.